Welcome, everybody. This is SharePoint Dev Weekly. It is episode 66, isn't it? That's what I put on the invite.
Yes, it is.
Cool. And it is now, today is 13th, Monday, 13th of January, and luckily not Friday. Well, I live in house number 13, so I don't really believe in these things. Well, and it wasn't a good buy, by the way, but that's a separate discussion. So this week we do have a visitor, so good to have new MVP on the house as well. Before we actually go there, let's actually do a quick recap. Welcome, everybody. This is SharePoint Dev Weekly. My name is Esa Juvonen. I'm here with my co-host, Waldek. Who are you?
Hi, everybody. My name is Vadim Astigat. I am head of product at Rancor.
Yes, and I'm a principal program manager in the SharePoint OneDrive development platform engineering. But today we have a really new and fresh MVP on the house, right? Hugo, yes. Who are you?
I'm Hugo Grenier. I'm a brand new MVP as of January 1st. So I still have that new MVP smell on me. And I've been working with SharePoint since before it was called SharePoint, and it was called Tahoe back then, and that's what I've been doing for the last 20 so years. I work for a company called Point Alliance, and we do SharePoint consulting in Office 365.
Sounds good. And you're calling from which location?
Oh, I am. I'm currently in Barrie, Ontario, which is an hour and a half north of Toronto in Canada.
Okay. So you have snow then? Because
Don't.
The window
behind me is actually covered with snow. You can't see outside.
I would love to have snow, but no snow.
Well, actually, they have now all the snow from everywhere.
Yeah, that seems to be the theme. Yeah. To be fair, I was seeing some forecasts and messages in the social media that Seattle got snow as well, and Redmond got snow. It is now, as we're recording this, it's 4:30 on Monday morning in a Seattle timeframe. So most likely they will wake up in a snowy Redmond this morning. So that typically means that nobody's actually driving to work. So
perfect.
Nobody's going to be in work.
Yeah, I mean, here we have 8 degrees centigrade, and we have slight overcast, but there is sun, so no snow. No snow anywhere near me.
Same here, actually. 8 degrees as well in Celsius. Anyway, let's actually... So what else happening in the world? Super organized. So Hugo, you've been working working with the community or having a blog post and all of that for a while, and then you started being actually active on the community side of the house as well, so on the PMP and what we've been doing together with the open source. What you've been doing there on that side? We're going to have a look on some of the examples, but just an example. Was that a knowingly decision that you wanted to get involved because at some point you just popped into the map and started being active?
I've never quite felt it was my place to write samples for people or to blog about stuff until recently. It's going to be over a year now, where a friend of mine told me, you think you have nothing interesting to say, but you've been working with this for a long time, and there are people who have started, literally today and yesterday, and they can benefit from it. So my first few blog articles were really intended to be notes to myself. I figured if I write a note to myself and someone benefits from it, that's great. But I don't want anybody to look at my blog post and say, everybody knows about this, or, why are you blogging about this? And I gradually started writing code samples. And again, it was always meant to be, for me to share with other people as opposed to me trying to teach anyone. And then I started getting heavily involved in writing reusable controls, and web part samples and things like that. I always called myself the world's laziest developer. I never bothered checking if it's true or not. That's how lazy I am. But I like to write reusable controls because it allows me to, it's code that I have to write once and I can reuse as often as possible. And I'm still working on a few controls that I'll be submitting over the next few weeks, hopefully. Yep. Depending on, I'm doing a lot of speaking engagements over the next few weeks. So in my spare time, I'll be working on those controls.
Yeah. Well, because there's so much spare time anyway nowadays.
Between the hours of 3 a.m. and 5 a.m. has got lots of time.
Yeah. All the time, right?
Yes. And you can then you talked about the controls. We're obviously talking about the BMP SPFX controls, which Ilya has been actively working on, and you've been definitely contributing plenty of those on that side with the reusable thing. So what would be your, you're leading a consultant team or a consultant group of consultants in your company. What would be your recommendation nowadays as a, let's say, how do you run your business? What is the recommended patterns and how do you do your business in an efficient way? Don't give us any tricks or which would, or anything which your company wouldn't want you to share. But
No, I think the number one thing is I always talk about a acquisition model for components, which is reuse, buy, build. So if there is something built into SharePoint, use that. Don't write anything, you know, custom. And I see that all the time, and it makes me angry because you end up having to support that. So use what's available out of the box. So even use list formatting and things like that. If that's not available, is there something that you can buy? And by buy, I mean acquire from an external source. It doesn't mean that you have to pay money for it. There's lots of open source solutions out there, look for that. And it, you know, I think to me, someone who's a good consultant has a good understanding of what's available out there, both in the product and available at, you know, to purchase. And then if you can't reuse and if you can't buy, then by all means, start building something yourself. But that's where, you know, when I'm working on reusable components, for example, reusable controls, I try to take it from, you know, build to reuse or to buy for other people. And that's the number one thing. I also always recommend people to do only what is supportable. You know, I'll see a lot of developers, they'll say, oh, yeah, we can do this. Absolutely, we can do this. It'll, you know, completely change the nature of you know, everything out there. And we really hope that, you know, nothing ever changes because it'll all fall apart. But if all those conditions are true, then we can do it, you know. So that's the part that I always say, you know, do what is supported. Even, and I think you and I, Vis, I know, like I've pushed the boundaries of that a few times with injecting custom CSS into pages and things like that. But that was because there was a specific need that there was an accessibility need for a large client and we needed to inject different things. And we did it with the absolute understanding that things would break or could break.
Exactly. Right? And that's the thing, as long as you understand the impact of your decision, that's the, there's no right or wrong when you're implementing stuff in Office 365 as such. You need to just understand the implications of the decisions, right?
That's right.
Well, unless you want
to
build sandbox solution with code, that is wrong, obviously.
Yeah, well, yes. You can't.
There you go, which
that.
Is wrong. So that is typically wrong.
You need to understand what's possible, but then what's supported and what's not supported is a separate discussion, right? So something might be deprecated, which means that you should not use that, but still.
Yeah.
So like InfoBath or whatever. So.
Yes, or if you're paid by the hour. And you're an evil consultant and you don't mind charging your clients for redoing the same work over and over again.
Yeah.
So I use the term evil consultant because that's one of the, I started blogging a few times as an evil consultant, kind of describing the anti-patterns. Here's what to do if you want to fail. I'm actually doing a talk in Salt Lake City, Utah, as an evil consultant. So it's not me, it's my evil twin that's actually presenting on how to fail doing a SharePoint migration.
Can we get some sneak peeks on that one? So what would be examples? Do not do following things. So
IT knows better. You don't need to talk to your customers about how they use the SharePoint or how they use their documents. You know better. Just, you know, do what you think is best. And don't tell people you're going to migrate or don't even let them know what's going to happen because users love surprises and they have nothing better to do.
Yeah, yes.
So I think I'm going to have a lot of fun doing that presentation. Hopefully people will, I hope that no one will come in halfway through the presentation and think I'm being serious.
Wait a minute. So what am I supposed to, I'm not supposed to like avoid all communication, no communication plan. Don't announce anything in advance. Don't prepare. Don't back up.
Yeah.
Why would you do that? Are you crazy?
Yeah.
And they're like, okay.
It was I was at a client and they had hired a third party company to do a migration, and that migration should have taken maybe 6 to 8 weeks, let's say 3 months at most. They've been there for 2 years, and when you look at, you know, all the best practices for SharePoint migrations, they're doing exactly the opposite of every one of them. Yeah. To a point where I felt like these guys are doing that on purpose. Like they're actually looking at the list and they're saying, okay, I'm going to do the exact opposite of that. So I went home and I started writing a blog, but I didn't want people to think I was being rude or anything like that. So I decided I'll write it as kind of the evil Hugo. That's how I wrote it. And I got so much good feedback about it. People saying, yeah, please continue doing that.
So I mean, with them, are you sure that they haven't attended any of your talks on that topic where they exactly missed the first part where you say, like, do not... And like, do this.
Well, Hugo said to do that.
Yeah, and he's an MVP now, so hell yeah.
That really reminded me of some of my old times when I did some farm solution. We talked about farm solution development before we started the recording, but I helped with some of the customers and we needed to do kind of a reverse engineer their compiled code because they didn't have source code. And a farm solution source code. So we needed to reverse engineers using ALSpy or what was the other one to actually get a code which
reflector, yeah.
Then yeah, reflector. Thank you.
Reflector, yes.
And then we moved to use ALSpy. And then basically because they didn't have source code. And nobody in the customer's organization thought about the fact that maybe we should actually have the source code. And I was able to even find the persons who implemented the thing and they said, well, we don't have the source code because we don't own it. Customer owns that. It's like, well, how could that?
The code was somewhere like lost between like, I compile it because I compiled it. I don't need it anymore.
Exactly. But to be fair, the same applies actually on the nowadays 100% still. Even with the SharePoint framework development, it's not like you can decompile the compiled JavaScript files to TypeScript. No, that's just
No.
Hopefully not.
No, I mean, if you minimize them, good luck with that.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Yes, I think the other thing that I always recommend my guys when they start building solutions is make sure that everything you do is accessible in terms of people with disabilities, making sure that it works with that. But also that it's usable in terms of don't reinvent a whole new set of controls and look and feel and things like that when you have Office Fabric UI available for you.
Yep.
Because you're asking your users to look, you know, they're looking at the Office 365, you know, the SharePoint pane, and then you have your control that is completely different with weird colors and with look and feel. It's always challenging because I always want to let, you know, people make their own mistakes, but I also want to create a safe boundary for them to be able to make those mistakes. Oh, I'll just use Bootstrap, right? I know how to use Bootstrap. I'll just use Bootstrap in my web part. And then eventually they run into the problems that we all know you'll run into.
But on the other hand, in the classic experience, Bootstrap was the way to do certain things. So it's kind of understandable if they haven't been trained to use the modern ways of customizing SharePoint. So obviously people should be trained on that rather than going to the customer engagements and then learn by mistakes. But at the same time, if you learn by a mistake, then you actually remember that. Right?
sticks more, yes.
Exactly.
When you really get scars, yeah. So this time I was trying to do a text field and a drop down list in Bootstrap. This one here is when I wanted to have a carousel.
Right.
But those things you actually remember, right? That's when you think about when you think about your let's say path of learning things and getting the experience to understand and having the let's say gut feeling of making right decisions, that all of that is based on the fact that you got burned numerous and countless of times. And then you understand that okay, maybe this doesn't feel good. I don't know what it is, but maybe we should do something else. So,
so the one thing I wanted to ask you, Hugo, is that you said that like you give people the room to do their stuff, but in the end, you want to check that whatever they have done is the right way to do it. It's supportable, accessible, and it works. That's right. You have like what is your approach to doing that? Do you review all their code, or do you have any tools for that? How do you go about it?
Well, I've been a big proponent of iterative development for pretty much as long as I've been coding, and more recently, you know, it's picked up the fancy term agile. So I am, and you know,
like a decade ago, but.
Yeah, exactly. Scrum, DevOps, DevSecOps, yes.
Yeah.
More recently. Well,
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's, to me, those are all buzzwords, you know, that really describe what I've been doing, and I think probably all of us have been doing for a very long time. But so it allows you to constantly deliver progress and, you know, new features and things like that. But also be able to manage risks, because you're not disappearing for 6 months or 3 months. Yep. You're, you know, every day you should be checking in code, and your tasks should probably not even be longer than a day. So if I see that you're not delivering new tasks, which happens, we have bad days, I know that there's probably something going on. The other thing that I do in my team, and I'm sure a lot of people who watch this will recognize this, it's the half hour rule. So if, you know, a lot of developers are too proud to ask for questions, and they feel that they're going to be embarrassed if they ask questions. So they'll disappear for 2 weeks, try to solve something on their own, when probably the person that sits next to them has done this and knows how to do this. Yep. So the half hour rule is, you know, if you've been stuck on something for more than half an hour, raise a flag, you know, ask someone, phone a friend, let's open a ticket with Microsoft. And I guarantee you, if you think that you're going to be embarrassed by asking questions, I guarantee you that'll make you feel more embarrassed if I find out you've been spending more than half an hour on something. Because our clients don't want to pay for your time to figure out something because of your pride.
Yes.
So those, you know, by always having deliverables, it's one way that helps us, you know, do that. CI/CD was that. Continuous improvement, continuous deployment are other ways to be able to monitor progress and to be able to see. If you want to catch a mistake, you want to catch it as early as possible, not the day before it's time to deploy it, which is,
right.
You hear that all the time, right? Oh, we're on time. And then 2 weeks before it's time to go live, they're like, oh, we're 6 months behind. Short of a rip in the fabric of time, this should never happen.
Right, but I mean, there is many folks who say, like, we don't need no tests. We know what we do. Our code works until it doesn't, or until somebody changed something that trickles to somewhere else, and now that thing doesn't work because of a change there, right?
Yeah,
true. Yeah, and I'm coming back on what Hugo was saying, and even that especially in the larger projects, even that up to the level of getting a draft versions to the customers on a, let's say, bi-daily or once a week, so that they can actually say that, oh, the specification we talked about that it should be working like this, but that was actually wrong. So can we change this now that I'm seeing that live?
No, we cannot. It's set in stone. We cannot change it. It's going to be a change in a project, change in scope. We cannot do that. Yes.
but the thing is, when you meet the customers and have a discussion with customers, they might have this weird thinking and whatever they want, and until they get their hands on it, they don't have any clue. And then you show them the thing, and it's like, well, yeah, this is exactly what I asked, but this isn't actually what I intended that to be. Okay,
but I don't think that's specific to them, because even myself being a dev, like, I start with building something with an idea, and then I build and I see, well, that doesn't work, or that is slow, or that is inconvenient. And then you basically have to experience it first until you can say, yes, that was my idea, but that's not what I want.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. And even trying to do the riskiest and the highest business importance things first. So when you start a project, you're working with a team, and there's a team that's building an API or doing the back-end legacy systems, and you're doing the front-end. The first thing you should do in the first week is, let's agree on a contract. You create a fake API that will return me hard-coded data, and I will consume that API. Now, we can go off. you know, you can start writing your data back to the back end, and I'll start putting it on the front end. But as long as we never change that contract, we don't have to worry that, you know, when it's time to go live, it's going to work, as opposed to what we always see, which is, oh, I thought you were doing that, or, you know, what do you mean I have to authenticate?
Why do I need to authenticate against the tape? What?
No, but it's our API. Yes. And it's exposed on the internet.
Yeah. And that's usually where you end up with solutions like, oh, we'll just make everybody administrator, or we'll hard code the password.
Yeah.
No. So my big thing is, Are you saying it's a solution you've used before?
I've seen it in the wild.
I think everybody has seen it in the wild as well. So realities of life, being on this business for a few decades,
but it's like
weird stuff.
It's like the same thing, like in a way, like, okay, so you build the thing in Azure, you put all your secrets in Key Vault, and the way you go to Key Vault, you have to have a key to access the Key Vault. And when do you put the key in plain text in your web config? Like, wait a minute.
Yeah.
So what do you do exactly?
Yeah, but you did make it slightly more difficult. Yeah, exactly.
All keys are safe.
Yeah.
No, and in IT, I think we have, this is a very unique industry that we have a tendency to start every IT project like it's the first IT project we've ever done every single time. Oh, we don't need to put buffers in our estimates, or we don't need to test. Or why would we spend time doing an automated build and deployment where it doesn't take long to build? But, you know, then it becomes a ceremony of, oh, my God, we have to build. And let's not build too often because we're spending more time building than we are, you know, coding.
On the development, that's the downside of the, let's say, it's the interesting balance in the industry right now, on especially on the area where what we represent, which isn't a life, let's face it, if your web part doesn't work in the Microsoft 365 or SharePoint Online, nobody's going to die, most likely. It's highly unlikely that your web part is business critical up to the level of somebody's health. Theoretically, yes, but then is it really the right system to build the life critical, whatever?
Well, so are you trying to say something about how reliable it is? On the bomb
Let's
show.
Cut this section.
Yes.
Let's cut the... No, but it's one of those things where because it's not life and death situation, then the quality isn't actually the most critical factor, and therefore is it where are we spending time is kind of debatable, and it's an interesting always the dilemma on having that discussion with customers, because they're interested in getting the stuff shipped, right? Getting the stuff shipped is the automatic building is going to get stuff shipped. Well, actually it does, but you need to convince the customer for that decision, right? So but it is an interesting business, especially on this side of the cloud business, so to say, because on Azure definitely, and people build on business critical things in Azure side of the house, and sure there are businesses which are 100% dependent on accessing the files in SharePoint Online and in Microsoft 365, and it has to work, but the day-to-day business, is it actually driven based on those files, or is it driven based on some LOB system? That's debatable. So even though I think there's quite a few businesses which are executed based on Excel files. So
oh, yes.
Shall we go to the
I article? Think we should, yeah. We'll otherwise we'll run out of time. So we do have a hard stop on the hour, but we're not gonna tell how much time that means. Let me share my screen.
Well, depending when you watch the video, it might be your hour or not.
That is true. You never know. There's a 60 minutes time frame. You might actually fall on the same schedule. No, never. So first of all, we're super happy on this one. We talked about this one actually last week as well, and we finally did it. Woohoo! SharePoint Framework 1.10 is out. We were planning to get it out actually already before Christmas, but then the Christmas break was getting closer and closer, and then we decided that, okay, it doesn't make any sense to get it out, because if something goes sour, then it's really hard to fix when everybody's on holidays. So we delayed then the release until now. And now it's out since last Tuesday. So on the same day as the last SharePoint Weekly went live. And the big things here, definitely the more deeper integration with Microsoft Teams. We're looking into having, well, that's the personal app support here. We are building a proper personal app sample pretty soon, because personal apps is not necessarily just one tab. It might be multiple tabs and bots and all of that. So we're building that story one step at a time. Preview functionality in Office and Outlook, Outlook Web Access for now, and then sooner or later, you can build any Office add-in using SharePoint Framework. And at that point, probably it won't be called anymore SharePoint Framework, but we'll see. That's not my decision. That's somebody else's decision. Search query extensions in preview, and then better application rendering experience, which technically went live already before the Christmas, so pre-allocated spaces. Now, a few things related on this. We released quite a lot of documentation. So if you go to the release notes, which was referenced in the blog post, you can actually see the documentation links in here, which then actually are updated, as an example, the Office add-ins tutorial and all of that. Now, depending on when you're watching the video, it might be that the Office add-ins are not yet working in your tenant. There seems to be some delays on getting that fully flighted, enabled across all of the tenants in the world, but it should be there in a moment of days, so to say. Good stuff, anyway, and a lot of improvements also from the versioning perspective. Seems to be one of those things where the customers want to have a stabilization and stable once they're slowly moving forward, but then all of the devs wants to have the latest and greatest in TypeScript and all of the React and everything else. So which is an interesting dilemma for us to manage as well. So making sure that everything is supported 100%. For now, also Node.js is now deprecated. It's going to be removed in the Node 8. It's going to be deprecated, moved in the next release. 10 is now the supported, 12 is not yet supported. So a good point to remember as well. And knockout-based template is going to get removed. Good to be aware of that one as well. So we basically saw that nobody was using knockout based on our metrics, so it doesn't make any sense for us to spend time on testing that it's working as part of every single release.
That makes sense.
If you're using knockout, you can still build knockout stuff, but we will not give you a default template for it. So that's the change for it. Good. A few other articles. This one is a new tutorial. This really actually bothered me for a while, because we didn't have a simplistic tutorial explaining how to use Microsoft Graph and SharePoint Framework. So this is as simple as it gets. No, it was too complex what we had. It was too. It talked about the Azure AD API and the Graph API in one article, and then it was complex.
Okay.
So this is much more uber simplistic, asking the permissions and then a few lines of code and done. So just making sure that people understand the simplicity of using the JavaScript SDK with SharePoint Framework, accessing, for example, the messages and how the permission model works, and nothing more than that.
Nice.
Seems to be a kind of a growing theme as well, where we tend to overcomplex our samples. And this is something what we, even when we started the current BMP initiative, the old BMP in SharePoint was all about the actual patterns and isolation patterns and singleton patterns and how to use those in SharePoint. And actually, not that many people were using that. It was because it was too complex and too advanced and too kind of elaborated. So the maturity of audience couldn't actually adapt that.
Because majority of folks are like, okay, so how do I create an item in a list?
Exactly.
It's like,
exactly.
No, dependency one injection and this. Like,
yeah. So we're trying to again recap a lot of the basics, because we're seeing much more and more people actually joining. We need to make sure that we have basics up to date rather than too complex and too polished samples, which are absolutely welcome as well, but still. If you have as in case for you, Hugo, when you have a new recruit in your development team, and do you throw him with a complex sample, or do you throw him with a, hey, have a tutorial and get
dependency
based
injection all the way, right?
Yeah. No, and I think
locator pattern.
I'm guilty of that. I'll write samples that are, you know, almost solutions, because from my perspective, when I learn something, I like to crack open the code and to understand how it works, and I like to see something that works before I can go into it. But it makes sense to create samples that are a bit more, you know, one-on-one. Here's how to make a call, here's how to insert a file, and things like that.
Yeah. Well, obviously we need both, but still not forgetting the basics, because the basics is the way for people to adapt the baseline. information. Now, a few other things just before we started recording. This went live, a January 2020 update on the SharePoint BMP. So this is our monthly summary on what has happened, articles, news, samples, all of that stuff, what's happening in BMP provisioning, what's happening in search, and obviously the most important part, the key contributors within the last month, which is a massive list of people. So it's good to see that we're getting more and more and more people being active here. I think we did a all-time record on the company logos this time. So we're getting more and more companies
cool.
who want their logo to be visible as part of this initiative where we work together as a community building these things. And there's the Hugo's company there as well. So Point Alliance.
Woo! That looked familiar.
Yep. by the way, for those who contribute but your company isn't visible, please, please, please send us an email and a message with the logo and give us a permission to use your company logo. That's enough for get the logo available. Now, a few other things. So, Hugo, you've been actually active on these. You built actually both of these categories and galleries. And this is really, if you do AKMS, SPFX web parts, you actually land on this page. And the key point here, don't freak out, too much text, I'm too tired, I don't want to read. But if you go samples, you can actually see all of the latest and greatest samples which are available in the web parts. And this is really, really cool because you can actually filter down, you can actually have a look on the based on SharePoint framework version. We have stuff in 1.91. And the latest ones which went live today as part of the monthly summary are already available in here. Thank you, Hugo, for being active on that one as well. So really, really cool stuff. So compatibility.
Maybe we should think about adding a filter in terms of, is it a beginner, is it advanced?
Complexity level,
level, which is always, that's so subjective. That's the challenge. It's not based on a,
I mean, if it has dependency injection, locator pattern, then it's basic, right?
Sure, sure. Whatever, fallback, whatever. Samples by year. No. We have some samples from 2016 now even. So really cool. Good stuff. And plenty of stuff from 2019. Nothing from 2020 yet. So
yet.
We should have something coming soon because I was going through some samples yesterday.
Yep.
But if someone's looking at opportunities to contribute, looking at some of the older samples and upgrading them,
yes.
Using the Office 365 CLI is a great way to contribute.
Yep. The Office 365 CLI gives you, as an example, if you have a, let's say, pre-release, GA, we have a older versions in here. The CLI gives you the required steps from moving from 1.4 to 1.9 or 1.10. It's just,
yes.
CLI is just brilliant on that. And sure, yes, maybe somebody should, we as a Microsoft, we should invest time on that, but it's just a matter of 24 hours in a day, 7 days in a week. We need to prioritize our time. And I need to clearly ping Chris Kent to do some upgrades here as well. So Chris, step up. I think it's a good way of contributing as well. So, and obviously, if you contribute by upgrading any of the samples, then you get actually mentioned as a contributor in the monthly summary as well, which is pretty cool, even with your company name, if you want that to happen. Really cool. Now, let's move on to things. This is from Yannick. Yannick, we had a part one about the Microsoft Cloud subscriptions last week, and then part two is now out starting from today, actually, at January 13. So this is really around the guidance on using the Azure Functions with a Graph webhooks and Graph subscriptions. So really cool stuff from Yannick. This one was from David Ramalho. Good kind of a basic article, reminders on how to do things. So if you want to hide a SharePoint list from the site contents, if you are a SharePoint, let's say farm developer with a farm developer background, this is quite familiar most likely for you. But it's nothing more than setting the hidden equals true. And there's a PMP PowerShell side of the house, and then there's a CLI side of the house. So that means that the list is no longer visible in the site contents. So the end users cannot actually get confused on going there and deleting something. So we use this natively within the SharePoint product quite heavily. So if you have a look on the amount of lists in a root site collection, there's actually quite a few of them which are hidden by default. Good. This one is from Marcus Müller, related on Outlook add-ins with SharePoint Framework. So getting started on implementing Outlook add-ins using SharePoint Framework. So really extending on the tutorial and the sample which we provided. And I think this time he's uploading the email attachments to the personas OneDrive, which are coming in, which is actually a pretty cool sample. So. Yep. Might be useful as such, and obviously all of the logos and formatting and everything else you can always modify the way you want. I think Marcus wanted to demonstrate the functionality and get stuff moving and use the Office add-in context. So really cool. There's a multiple series, by the way. It's multiple parts on the blog post as well. SPFX optimized package bundle chunk names part one, custom bundle names from David Warner. So really talking about the JavaScript chunks and how to minimize them and what does that actually mean. Hugo, you had a look on this one. You said that it's kind of funny. There's some humor inside of it, which is quite typical for David as well. So
yes,
we are so dry. We Finns do not know. So
yes.
Anyway. Yes. Walik okay. is trying to learn to be a Finn.
Yes, it's okay.
It's okay. It's okay. The it's okay. Actually, that's a Finn being super excited and yes. and excited on things.
Or also being angry.
It's okay.
Never bad, never awesome. It's okay.
It's okay. This one is from a Finn, actually. So Matti is from Matti using Microsoft Presence API on a SharePoint Framework. So pretty cool, actually, open source web part using the new Graph API as Presence API to actually show who's available from the team inside of the group behind of the team, Microsoft team. So pretty cool implementation as well. And this is, I think, that the beta, the Presence endpoint is really, really, really cool and seems to be working really reliably as well. So a lot of interesting opportunities over there. And this one is from Ram Prasad. Ram been pretty active on the past as well. And this is really around filtering SharePoint list items based on currently logged users. So you want to get items which are assigned to a user or they are based on the user who is watching things. So you can actually build personalized experiences. So really guidance around that one. Really cool stuff from Paul Bullock. I think that the one of the things people don't necessarily understand how flexible the learning pathways is. So I wanted to actually call this out. So Paul is pretty nicely explaining adding partner custom contents or custom content in the Microsoft Learning Pathway portal. So when you provision the Microsoft Learning Pathways, you can actually modify the content there. Based so you can have your company specific videos on how your portal should be used and what are the guidances on the your custom web parts and all of that as part of the learning pathways as well. And the learning pathways itself, you can actually easily get it provisioned using the lookbook.microsoft.com. In here, if you go to the solutions, you can find the Microsoft 365 learning pathways and then use the add to your tenant functionality. There's a lot of guidance available, what it is and how does it actually work. It is a really cool solution. And we're looking into I'm not explicitly involved in this one. I'm partly involved in this project, but there's a discussions going on that maybe we should actually have this one as an open source solution as well. So really cool implementation done by a few MVPs and a few Microsoft internals. And then the final video.
Happy Paolo.
From Paolo. Pre-allocated space for SharePoint Framework extension placeholders. This really relates on the functionality which we mentioned in here, which is the last one, application customizer rendering experience. So pre-allocate the placeholder extension, pre-allocate the hide of your header as an example. And then how do you actually take advantage of it? How do you configure that using the identified extensions if you prefer to do that? Or how do you want to do that? So really nice video for 4.4 minutes, 15 seconds from Paolo. Super useful.
And Paolo laughs or smiles at 3 minutes and 58.
Something
yes,
like
because
that.
Because if you go to 4 minutes 10, he doesn't anymore.
Yeah, not anymore. No, I'm going to stop presenting because we have 2 minutes before and there's a hard stop for one of the attendees in the call. So what's going to happen this week? Hugo, what are you planning to do? It's going to be snow fighting for you? No. Canada can hand us snow, so that's one thing.
I'm speaking at a user group, a SharePoint user group in Toronto this week, and then I have to prepare for a couple speaking engagements in San Diego and Salt Lake City.
Yep. Yeah, there's no SharePoint Saturdays this week, which was slightly surprising, but then there's the San Diego is the next
San Diego,
one.
Yeah.
What about you, Waldeck? Anything specific from your side?
A lot of things. So I will be continuing. I will not be building anything because we have a get together at Rancor in Munich. So I'll be flying there over on Wednesday, meeting folks basically. So I will not be coding that much. Yesterday we had a look at the CLI, like the number of things that we could improve around it, and we came up with a bunch of ideas, varying from performance to adding support for things like James Path queries that you have in the CLI for Azure and other things. So I'm pretty pumped about all the things that we can do, add to CLI to make it quicker, better, faster, more useful, and so forth and so on. And we even realized that majority of people who use it in PowerShell. And it seems like the
which
only
is interesting.
Exactly. And then and that happens to be the only shell in which we do not offer completion or commands.
Yeah.
Because that uses different way than every other shell. So it's like and it's been on our plate for, I don't know, a year or two now. So I think it is the highest time for us to look into that.
Get it, man. On my side of the house, nothing too special, just quick recapping. There's some progress actually on the .NET frameworks, .NET standard /core, .NET core version of CSUM. So there's a lot of stuff behind the scenes what we're prepping now. The SBC is coming pretty soon, actually, even though it sounds like May. Well, there's plenty of time for May, but actually there isn't. So we need to get our plans in line and making sure that we know what we're going to ship on where and basically locking down the plan. But a lot of stuff happening during the spring and then growing the SharePoint framework usage across the Microsoft 365, which seems to be actually catching quite nicely. So really cool on that. But I think that's it for now. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Thank you, everybody, for watching. And thank you, Hugo, for being our visitor at this time. Lovely to have you in the call. Good to have you once here. We'll get you another seat later, sooner or later. Later.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Hugo.
Thank you, and thanks everybody for watching. Bye-bye. We'll be back.
Bye. Bye.